Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity and the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. Where is the time going? If you're in the Northeast and you like rain, the last 2 days have been phenomenal. You should be enjoying yourself. Oh, it says April 4th. Hold on 1 second there. So in case you're on the audio version of this on Safety FM, the great Safety FM, I have a calendar that was gifted to me by my Uncle Dave many, many, many years ago. And he says, one day you're going to need it. And this is before any of the streaming stuff comes on. So what I end up doing is, and it is Wednesday, updating this every day. Right? A little bit of... So, you know, one day you're going to be making video phone calls. They got me this about 30 years ago here. And he said, well, you can put it on your desk, but one day you're going to use it. And, well, guess what? I'm using it now. Good planning ahead. And thank you, Uncle Dave. Now, a lot of rain out there. I tell you what, accidents and everything else. So what I am trying to do, I have a webcam. Not a webcam. A dashboard camera now in my truck. I got one of these, and I've had one on and off for years, but I was never really happy with them. And then I got this like 4K webcam, and I mean video camera for the truck, dashboard camera. I tell you what, great crystal clear photos. And we are videotape all different types of stuff. At the end of the week, my intention is to put together like over the weekend and have a weekend release of the best videos, car accidents, people doing stupid stuff on the highways, things of that nature. Just unbelievable. And you never know when something is going to happen. So, for example, we were, my son and I were going to church on Sunday, Easter Sunday. And, you know, and in the Lutheran church, you have usually the service starts outside. Right. Often, I can't say usual, but often starts outside, and then you enter into the church. And you know, Easter Sunday—that's for Palm Sunday, and sometimes Easter Sunday. But anyway, we wanted to get there early and greet everybody who we haven't seen at church for the last year. I mean, we're trying to get back up and running after COVID and everything else, like a lot of people in the religious communities are. And, so it's really important that we're there, right? So for Sunday morning. We're getting there, and what do you know? Massive car accident. It was a one-vehicle accident. It was a big one on the way to church. And what was ironic was, or I don't know. I don't want to be like the Alanis Morissette, right? Misusing the word ironic, but one of the strange, unusual things is that we were coming up the hill, and a car hit a telephone pole, and we stopped. We were the second car on scene, called 911, made sure everybody was okay, or you know, what kind of help they needed. No bleeding. The woman definitely was in shock, and whoever was there before me, the first car on the scene, had already had her in a blanket, trying to keep her warm. No, because that's what you're supposed to do with people in shock. and there was no bleeding, no broken bones, nothing like that. Airbags deployed. But this car had, this is the third time in about 3 weeks that this telephone pole has been hit. And you would think that, you would think, well, maybe the telephone pole might be in the wrong place. Okay, that may be true, but if that telephone pole wasn't there, she would have went into an outcropping, and then rocks would have fallen onto the car. I don't think that's any better. So, no. Do you want to hit a telephone pole, or do you want to hit a rock outcropping? You don't want to hit either one, but it's like, what do you do? And this was like the third, this was the second, so they hit it the first time, right? About 3 weeks ago, thing caught on fire. And what do? They replaced the telephone pole. Then they hit it again the week before. Next week, well, they never replaced it. They didn't get around to replacing the telephone pole. And then someone hit that. Hit what was left of the first telephone pole. Like, whoa. But you never know when any of this stuff is going to come out. So what I'm going to encourage everybody to do, and again, it's depending on your workplace, it may or may not be a requirement. The OSHA stuff is just like the IRS stuff, right? The IRS will never tell you this is what you need to do. This is what your tax liability is. This is what you need to do. They're going to say, these are the regulations. These are the rules. Figure out what applies to you. And if there is an issue, you get back to us. We're going to get back to you if there's an issue. If we disagree, OSHA, and I'm not defaming any, I'm just saying it like it is. OSHA, similar thing. They're not going to say you must comply with X, Y, and Z. You mustn't do that. Usually, sometimes they do. So, for example, OSHA, the record keeping and everything, they say, well, if you have 10 people or more, you have to do X, Y, and Z. If you have blah, 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 you must do, right? But they're not going to tell you, well, you have more than 10 people. Well, guess what? You're responsible for counting. They're not going to tell you you need first aid CPR trained people and AED first aid CPR trained people, right? They're going to say, well, you have to have, if you cannot get so many people, and this is in a letter of interpretation, so many minutes for medical type stuff, then you have to have some type of medical response, first aid CPR trained people. Note, I misspoken. I said AED and I caught myself. OSHA does not require AEDs in the regulation. I'm not saying that under the general duty clause or if ANSI makes that recommendation, they're not going to say something. ANSI does not. And as I also point out, they're going to say, they're going to refer you over to the ANSI standard, which escapes my mind what the number is. They're going to refer you over to that and say, well, this is what you need in a first aid kit, according to this. But you're still responsible for assessing your needs, right? And getting the right thing. So, for example, what is not included in a first aid kit? Mouth guards. That's not required legally. Mouth guards for mouth-to-mouth. Not legally required under OSHA. State law, some other law might, I don't know. You could make the argument, blood-borne pathogens. Okay, great. But you're not really now forcing people to do first aid CPR unless you're paid to do it. Paid, right? So it's still voluntary. Tourniquets, another one, not in there. In the future, I see blood glucose monitors being in there. Why? Every time that I have had to respond to a diabetic emergency, and believe me, I have extensive experience in this area, in the workplace. Every time I have seen someone with a diabetic emergency, what's the first question I ask? One, are you diabetic? Number two, do you tend to run high or low? Number three, do you have a blood glucose monitor? Sometimes the person is lucid enough and they are able to answer questions. Sometimes they're not lucid enough and don't answer questions. But what do I always find out? They do not have a blood glucose monitor on them. So what ends up happening is you're going to treat it as it's as if it's low blood sugar, because that's more commonly associated with a life-threatening situation versus a high blood sugar, even though I do have experience where people have had high blood sugar, where it was off the scale. So what's the moral of the story? Well, now, that might be one in the future. Well, we have a blood do you have a blood glucose monitor? And can you, not the first aid CPR person, can you take your blood sugar? Try to determine what's going on with you. Right? But what's the first thing you do? 911 or 911 if you're in some of the parts of the country. It's not 911, it's 911. If you're in Europe, there are other numbers. And elsewhere, we're in 27 countries. So that is what I'll say with that. You don't know when this is going to happen. You got to be prepared. Right? So, for example, my children are involved in sports. I have the standard first aid kit plus a whole bunch of other stuff that we may need for sports. Ace bandages, the ice packs, a splinting material. Again, splints are not necessary in a first aid CPR, in a first aid kit, according to ANSI, but that's maybe one that you need to consider. And a whole bunch of other things appropriate to that. Again, you could get first aid CPR training at 845-269-5772. Give me a call. Now, let me go to, I have to set this up a little bit, so let me go to commercial break, and we will be coming at you.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Learning is vital. Learning is vital.
Okay. And
you are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's Safety Today.
Pardon me, I had to cough there. So, here we are. All right, here we have. And let's get this sorted out here. We're doing a major computer upgrade here. I have some new software that we're going to be using here. And it's all web-based. However, my computer is not up to snuff with it with this, so we're going to be going to other stuff. I know it's, you know, so we're going to be talking about occupational hearing loss tonight, and specifically tonight is because I had an experience today at the doctor with this. So what prompted this discussion? About 6 months ago, maybe a little bit more, starting in September, I had that RSV virus that's going around. It's a respiratory thing, right? And horrible congestion for months, right? Until it resolved itself. And it resolved itself successfully. And then right after that, I had a death in the family, and we were cleaning out the loved one's house. And I came across a old COVID test kit, and I had, I had some stuff going on, you know, the COVID. A lot of people have had it. You know what it is after all these years. So I said, yeah, you know, I wonder, what if? And I took it again, and sure enough, that was COVID. I tested positive for COVID for the fourth time. Yeah, you gotta love it. Might have had it fifth time, because I think I had it one time before all these testing things are available. So either the fourth, definitely the fourth, maybe the fifth time. And then what did we end up having? The tinnitus slowly creeped in. So 2018, I was diagnosed with minor tinnitus. All right, what is tinnitus? And, tinnitus is basically, we'll go into that in a minute. Basically, hearing, ringing in the ears. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And now, so I'm prompting, you know, the occupational hearing loss. So here I am again on a government website. We are at the CDC, right? And we're talking about types of hearing loss. And a hearing loss can happen when any part of the ear or auditory hearing system is not working in the usual way. The outer ear, right, made up of the part we see of our heads, known as the pina, the ear canal, the eardrums, sometimes called the tympanic membrane, which separates the outer and middle ear. Then you have the middle ear, which has the eardrum, and three small bones called ossicles, that send movement of the eardrum to the inner ear. The inner ear is made up of a snail-like organ for hearing known as the cochlea, the semicircular canals that help with balance, and nerves that go to the brain. So there are four types of hearing loss. One is conductive hearing loss. That's hearing loss caused by something that stops sounds from getting through the outer or middle ear. This type of hearing loss can be treated with medicine or surgery. Sensorineural hearing loss that occurs when there is a problem in the way of inner ear and hearing nerve and of the inner ear or hearing nerve works. There's a problem there. Mixed, which is the first two, an auditory neuropathy spectrum disorder. So hearing loss that occurs when sound enters the ear normally, but because of damage to the inner ear or the hearing nerve, sound isn't organized in a way where the brain can understand. And, right. Now, you have four different types of hearing loss. Mild, that means a person with mild hearing loss may hear some speech sounds, but soft sounds are often hard to hear. Moderate hearing loss, a person with moderate hearing loss may hear almost no speech when another person is talking at a normal level. Severe hearing loss is a person with severe hearing loss will hear no speech when a person is, say, talking at normal level and some loud sounds. And profound, a person with profound hearing loss will not hear any speech and only very loud sounds. So I've had a family member who had profound hearing loss because of hearing ear infections when she was a young child that did not get resolved because she was in a concentration camp. Eventually caught up with her. And that's the story for another day and not for the show. So, all hearing loss is bad. It ain't coming back. And I get a little bit annoyed, especially with dealing with a family member with hearing loss. Not annoyed at the family member, but annoyed at other people who are like, oh, well, screw it. It ain't that big of a deal, blah, 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 blah. You do not understand how hearing loss impacts your life. It's profound. Not even not right. You hear, well, I can't hear my loved ones' voices. I cannot hear my grandchild's singing at the glee club, right? Or in choir or wherever. You hear all this stuff, right? You hear this from a lot of people who have hearing loss and then regret it. I don't understand why people don't take this seriously, especially with the technology we have today for hearing loss. And with all this stuff, we have, you know, all different types of apps on the smartphone. I'm not going to mention those apps. I have phone calls into them, you know, sort of thing, with all different apps right there. So or anything else. So hearing loss, that'll measure. We'll talk about that in a minute. Unilateral or bilateral hearing loss is from one ear or both ears. Prelingual or postlingual, meaning did you learn, happen before the person learned to talk, or after a person learned to talk. Postlingual, symmetrical, or asymmetrical, meaning both ears, not really, it can be symmetrical in both ears, same level in both ears, or different. That's what I have is asymmetrical, where I have a little slight, tiny-ish threshold shift, right, in the left ear, where some frequencies I can hear, but basically the doctor said you have better hearing than most people who are a third your age. And I said, well, I guess that's good. As the great Jay Allen said, you have superhuman hearing, but you have tinnitus. I said, yeah, basically. Hearing loss worsens over time, progressive or all of a sudden from like a trauma, fluctuating. Right, that's usually from due to illness or something, from my understanding, or congenital, meaning it's present at birth or appears sometimes later in life. That's also with me with the tinnitus, where I was not diagnosed until 2018 with it. And they blamed it on my cleft lip and cleft palate. So that's from the CDC. So I go into the doctor this morning, and again they said, well, why are you here? I said, well, you told me if it gets worse to please go and come in. And so here I am, and that was 5 years ago. They said, well, you should have, you know, we wanted you to be here a lot earlier than that, like every year, every other year for this. But okay, you're 6 years later, almost 6 years later. So I get in there, and I run through the whole battery of tests. And she says, well, the last time you were here, you were studying for some safety exams. I said, yeah, studying for the CSP and ASP. And I remember you had helped me out a little bit on the hearing portion of that, where, you know, on the noise portion of that, where you gave me a whole bunch of things. I had a whole bunch of questions. She said, yeah, I remember that. Right. So doctor says, well, you're in the construction field. You're doing environmental health and safety consulting. Did you, tell me about that. I said, well, I'm a safety professional. I said, I'm in charge of making sure and encouraging people to wear hearing protection. I said, I have a phone with a noise monitoring app in one hand. I have earplugs in the other hand. I said, when it's at a certain level, I put it in, right, over 90 decibels. I definitely put it in 85 to 90, maybe not, depending on how the plan is written and who wrote it. Anything over a certain level, I wear double hearing protection. She said, why is that? I said, well, because I know math. And I know, she said, yeah, well, I figured that. She says that people don't realize that. Once you get above a certain level, you need to wear double hearing protection. I said, yes, and we mentioned that. Now, had a whole bunch of stuff. I was very upfront with my other health issues, you know, the whole thing. Now, I went through and we did three different hearing tests on this, three different evaluations. So we had the one where you put the earphones on and then they give you sounds. Then they had one where they put earphones on. And on one ear, they have like the ocean running in one ear, and then you're giving you sound in the other ear, and then they switch it around, do that. And then they that measures the bone, right, hearing through the bone. So some hearing aids are designed like this, where they put it here and here, if you're looking on this, right, up by your, on your forehead, behind one of your ears, and you do, that's an auto acoustal emission. And, you know, that's what they did, three basic tests. And you can also have a behavioral autometry evaluation. That's something different that doesn't apply necessarily to tinnitus, even though some doctors, my understanding, do that for that. So for example, you know, for like a neurologist and everything else. So, and that's what I went through. Now you're going to say, well, how does this apply to me? I'm going to mosey on over, and let me make sure this is showing here, to the OSHA webpage. And we are at, the first thing you have to do is figure out whether you are in general industry or construction. So if you're in construction, what is that? There's a definition for it. It goes something like this. Construction is construction, demolition, right? Decorating, right? Or decorating, right? Or something like that. So art, if you're doing construction work, it is this. If you are doing anything else, then the general industry, shipyard, or something like that. So figure out where you are here with that. Now, you have, right? So 1926, the reason why you want to do that is this. This is sort of like the agricultural regulations, right? Where there's not a lot in here. So here we have protection against 1926.52, paragraph A. Protection against the effects of noise exposure shall be provided when the sound levels exceed those in table D2 of this section when measured on the A scale of a standard sound level meter at slow response. When employees are subjected to sound levels exceeding those listed in table D2 of this section, feasible administration or engineering controls shall be utilized. If such controls fail to reduce sound levels within the levels of the table, personal protective equipment as required in subpart E shall be provided to reduce the sound levels. What's in here? The variations in noise level involved maxima at intervals of 1 second or less, it is to be considered continuous. So if you're getting, you're in a mechanical process of some sort of pile driving, and it's, right, I'm banging into the mic 1 second or less, right? Now that's considered continuous for the purposes of this regulation. In all cases where sound levels exceed the values shown here in D2, a continuing effect of hearing conservation program shall be administered. And here we have duration, right? And you have decibels on the other. So for 8 hours, 90 decibels, 6 hours, 92. However, right, as a rule of thumb, and it goes down where you could go up to 115 decibels for a quarter hour or less. That's 15 minutes for most people. Now, I assume, right, if I'm on that sound, an app on the phone is going to be NIST, not going to be NIST certified. It's just a screening thing. Sort of like what we were talking about with diabetes equipment, those blood glucose monitors are, you know, not really accurate. Well, the same thing goes for the app on the cell phone for measuring noise. It may or may not be accurate, but it's a good screening device. And believe me, because I use it, it ends a lot of arguments. Like even from the most, hard-nosed, stubborn workers that are out there and supervisors. Well, we never, supervisor never told us what we had to wear hearing protection. You guys are making this up, you darn safety guys. They don't use that word. And then, you say, well, here it is. Yeah, here it is, guys. And they're like, oh, okay, no problem, Jim. Right? And then they go and they put it in every time. I haven't had it happen. And now we run through all different types of formulas that are associated with this. And you have a maximum level of 140 decibels. You're not allowed to go above that on there. And that's a measure of pressure. So essentially, let me go back here, 1926-52, for occupational hearing protection, there's no addendum, no nothing. There's not even, I'm not seeing a, and I could be wrong, letter of interpretation on this. Now we go out, mosey on over to 1910.95, right? 29 CFR 1910.95. And what do we have here? General industries. So if you're not in construction, you're not in a shipyard, you're not in agriculture, you're not in maritime, now you're into general industry. And I believe we'll double check on this with a 1915 standard, if there's anything, or, you know, with that, with noise. So, protection against the effects of noise exposure shall be provided when the sound levels exceed those shown in Table G16, measured on the A scale, and there are different scales, so that when noise right levels are determined by octave band analysis, the equivalent A-weighted sound level may be determined with this table, figure G9. And then it goes down in there, and it's the same levels here, right? G16, 90 decibels, right? That's the maximum in there. But let's see here. Boom, fine. And we're going to do... Right, the employer shall administer a continuing effective hearing conservation program as described in paragraph C through O of this section. Whenever the employee noise exposure equals or exceeds an 8-hour time-weighted average, which means you need the real noise monitoring equipment, not a phone, of 85 decibels measured on the A scale, slow response, or an equivalent dose of 50%. That means you have to have a dosimeter which averages these readings out of 85 decibels on that scale. Right, for the purposes of hearing conservation program, employee noise exposure shall be computed in accordance with Appendix A and Table G going on. All right, so at 85 decibels or more, you have to have a hearing conservation program or 50% or more. Not in the construction. Not in construction. So this is where a lot of people foul this up. But we're going to comment, but are they really fouling it up? Not really on this. So, are you in construction or general industry? Construction, very little, very few. General industry, pretty, right? And you have monitoring. And it goes on. And then it has employee notification, right? Then you have right to observation monitoring. Now we have 1910.95G. The employer shall establish and maintain an audiometric testing program as provided in this paragraph by making audiometric testing available to all employees whose exposure is equal or exceed an 8-hour time-weighted average of 85 decibels. The program shall be provided, right, at no cost. Audiometric tests shall be performed by a licensed or certified audiologist, going on, basically somebody who is qualified to do this testing of the person. And a technician who operates microprocessor audiometer meters does not need to be certified. A technician who performs audiometric tests must be responsible to an audiologist or someone else. And you have to have a baseline audiogram. So within 6 months of an employee's first exposure at or above the action level, the employer shall establish a valid baseline audiogram. I'm going to tell you this, right? Regardless of what world you're in, right? Regardless of what world you're in, you better, right? Construction, right? I advise everybody that what the first day that that person is hired, you send them for an audiogram. Especially if they are in occupations that historically have high levels of noise or hearing loss. Then you say, well, Jim, why is that? And Sanders says, I don't have to do that. You want me to go out and do this for construction workers for 3 days? I'm going to tell you, you do what you want to do. You do you. You do what you want to do. Go ahead. However, I'm going to tell you, it's happened already where, for example, used to be in a lot of oil industries, oil industry work I was affiliated with. We were doing 1910-120 work, hazardous waste site operations and emergency response work. And we had to go every year for hearing tests, right? Well, that was one of the really good benefits of working in that industry, is that we went for regular hearing tests. Every year for the annual physical, that's what we did. So what we and to establish a baseline, that was all part of it. Now, here we have the 1904 standard, basic requirement. If an employee's hearing test reveals that an employee has experienced a work-related standard threshold shift in hearing in one or both ears, and the employee's total hearing level is 25 decibels or more above audiometric zero, average at 2,000, 3,000, or 5,000 hertz the same year as the standard threshold shift, you must record the case on an OSHA 300 log. This is why you do audiometric testing, because this is often what happens when they get hired. This is often what happens. You hire somebody, right, on a construction site. They go and they work whatever job, and again, very short-term employment often. They leave the job. Right, they leave the job, right? They get laid off, or they sense there's a layoff coming. I have a hearing issue. Then they go to a doctor and say, what do you work in? We work in construction. What do you do? I am a laborer. I jackhammer. I am an industrial painter. I use abrasive blasting equipment, what we used to call sandblasting. We don't call it that anymore. Abrasive blasting equipment. And I have, all of a sudden, tinnitus. And they go on and on and on. Doctor goes, does an evaluation and says, well, how do we know that this did not come from work? Oh, guess what? You know, now you have an issue with it. Is it work-related or not? What happened? And by the way, I'm going to tell you this. Most companies do not do occupational noise assessments. I can tell you that. Here we have, are there any special rules for determining whether a hearing loss case is work-related? No. You must use the rules in 1904.5 to determine if the hearing loss is work-related. If an event or exposure in the work environment either caused or contributed to the hearing loss or significantly aggravated a pre-existing hearing loss, you must be considered a case to be work-related. Now let's mosey on over to 1904.5. Determination of work-relatedness. Basic requirement. You must consider an injury or illness to be work-related if an event or exposure in the work environment either caused or contributed to the resulting condition or significantly aggravated a pre-existing injury or illness. Work-relatedness is presumed for injuries and illnesses resulting from events or exposures occurred in the working environment. Unless an exception in 1904.5 specifically applies. And you could go through all of this stuff, right? So what's the exemption? B2. There are situations. At the time of injury or illness, the employee was present in the work environment as a member of the general public. The injury involves signs and symptoms that surface at work but results solely from a non-work-related event that occurs outside the work environment. I don't know how you can approve that. Are you going to start following people around? I've heard of companies do that, right? The injury or illness results solely from a voluntary participation in a wellness program or in a medical, fitness, or recreational activity such as a blood donation, physical exam, flu shot, exercise class, rocket, or baseball. Well, does softball count as baseball? I don't know. A lot of companies have softball teams. The injury or illness is solely as a result from lunch, basically. You're bringing lunch, right? The injury or illness is solely from a result from personal tasks and related to employment. The injury or illness is solely the result of personal grooming, self-medication for non-work-related condition, or is intentionally self-inflicted. A lot of, again, this is the dirty part of the business, guys. What do I always hear? When there is a fall, was this suicide? Was there a Did this person deliberately jump off the building or jump off the bridge? Because then it's not work-related. Oh, okay. Great. You want to go down that route? Good luck. The illness is a mental illness. Mental illness will not be considered work-relatedness unless the employee voluntarily provides the employer with the opinion of a physician or another licensed healthcare professional with appropriate training and expertise, stating that the employee has a mental illness and is work-related. Oh, that's a good one. Now, and then going on and on and on, do we have, let me do a search here, anything related to noise? No. How about hearing? No. All right, so let's see. Now we have, you come up here, you see a hyperlink, 1904.5a, and we're going to click on it, and let's see what the standard interpretations are, if there is anything. And I'm going through this because teach people how to use the OSHA website. So I see one having to do with hearing protection. So we are going to click on that. From 4/29/2016, somewhat current, recording criteria for cases involving occupational hearing loss when employees use hearing protection. OSHA requirements are set by statutes. This is from April 29, 2016, to someone in New Jersey. I'm not going to mention the person's name. Thank you for your January 11, 2016, and this is in April, so they got back to it pretty quick. Your letter has, right, OSHA's, and, right, you request a guidance on the issue of hearing protection attenuation and OSHA's occupational noise standard set in 1929 CFR 1910.95, so this is general industry environment. OSHA's Injury and Illness Record Keeping Regulation 1910.10 states in pertinent part, right, and they, right, 1904.10a, if an employee's hearing test reveals that the employee has experienced a work-related standard threshold shift, and it goes on, it must be recorded in there. Are there any special rules with this, right? You must consider, and it goes in there, if an event or exposure in the work environment is either caused or contributed to the hearing loss or significantly aggravated a pre-existing hearing loss, you must consider the case to be work-related. In your letter, you state that you understand that a worker's use of hearing protection alone does not always constitute a reason to not record a shift in hearing if the shift is in part or complete due to workplace noise exposures. You also state that you know the variability of the fit of hearing protection is one of the primary reasons for not allowing hearing protection alone to rule out work-relatedness, meaning you have to go through the hierarchy of controls with that. And you state that you understand that there can be added variables such as type of noise, use and tenure of hearing protection, duration of work, shift, length of employment, degree of hearing loss, threshold configuration, time-weighted average. However, to address, going on and on and on. Scenario, an employee works in a plant and is exposed to continuous noise no greater than 88 decibels A-weighted. Hearing protection is required whenever the workers are in the production area. The earplugs provided to the workers to the employees have a noise reduction rating set by the EPA of 27. Applying the DVA D rating, meaning the correction factor commonly knows, right, 27 minus 7 divided by 2. The worker's actual exposure would be 88 minus 10 or 78 decibels at the employee's ear. If an employee exposure after D rating falls below 85 decibels, would that be justification not to record an SCS shift on the OSHA log? Right? So, first, OSHA does not allow the worker, this is a response, the worker's use of hearing protection to be considered by an employer when making determinations of work-relatedness. However, this should not be the sole criterion in such determinations, nor should the determination be reduced to an equation. Under OSHA's record-keeping regulation, an employer must consider many factors when... Pardon me. Must consider many factors when determining whether hearing loss is work-related, and such determinations must be made on a case-by-case basis. So what does that say? Right? Employer must make the determination. Right? In the preamble to the July 2nd, 2002 final rule, OSHA explained that when evaluating the work-relatedness of a given hearing loss case, the employer should take several factors into account. These factors include the worker's prior occupational, non-occupational noise exposure, right? Evaluation of calibration records in the audiometric environment. Get those calibration records right. Investigation of related activities and personal medical conditions and age correction. Another important factor to consider is the effectiveness of the hearing protection program when employees are exposed to high levels of noise in the workplace and do not wear appropriate hearing protection devices. A case of hearing loss is more likely to be work-related. So here we go. When employees are exposed to high levels of noise and do not wear appropriate hearing devices, right? A case of hearing loss is more likely to be work-related. If an employee's hearing protection devices are not appropriate for the noise conditions, they do not fit properly, or they are not used properly and consistently, they may not provide enough protection to prevent workplace noise from contributing to a hearing loss. Now, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to stop sharing here. It is not, right? In my opinion, at least, it is not acceptable anymore. Not acceptable anymore. Not to have hearing protection out there. Because you have a thing called a smartphone. Yes, it is cracked. Yes. You have a smartphone. You have earplugs readily available. This isn't like back in my dad's day where they didn't have a lot of these rules. My father worked for many years, VO. Before OSHA. Right? And he always hated the safety professional because he said, look, it's too loud in here. Safety professional said, oh, not too loud in here. He was a, what we call a company man. And right, basically, oh, they're not in here, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and my father ended up with very severe tinnitus because of his work environment. He worked as a tool and die maker in a company we've all heard of. So, I'm going to read from the American Tinnitus Association here. All right, so I stopped to share, but basically, what is tinnitus? We talked about it all along. What is it? Ringing, buzzing, whooshing, or other sound in your ears that no one else could hear. 25 million Americans have that. So that's what? 7% of the population? So basically, what happens is, and I'm not reading from this, it's ringing in the ears. During the day, not so bad. But when it gets quiet at night, like when you're sleeping, it gets very bad for a whole host of reasons. Like you're putting your head down on the pillow. You have the cochlear fluid in there, whatever it's called. I can't pronounce it. Moving around. Here's an, and you're, you know, and your brain plays tricks and it's neurological. Right? And you end up hearing things. Buzzing, hissing, whistling, swooshing, clicking. For me, pardon me, I have a constant background noise, right? That sounds like a long beep. However, at times where I have congestion and often not no congestion from like sinus issues, right? Allergies, cold, COVID. What does it sound like? It sounds like the default phone ringing on the iPhone. pardon me. Message notification on an iPhone. That ping. So there are two types of tinnitus. You can have subjective tinnitus, where your neurological situation, or objective, where, and what that is very rare, where it is audible to other people. 1% of tinnitus cases, according to the American Tinnitus Association. Aye, aye, aye. So that's basically it. You know, it's like this. I don't get why people do not wear hearing protection. So I carry earplugs with me all the time. I know it sounds bizarre and everything else, and, you know, Oh, that's weird. You carry them around. Do you use them? Yeah, I do. Use them all the time. Why is that? It's painful at times, this whole tinnitus thing. Now, let's go to another break right here, and we'll go from there.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
So, yeah, let's consider this a deep dive here. Thanks for the encouragement, Jay. And let's see.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
So tomorrow we're going to go more into the news. There's lots of stuff going on in the news, but I wanted to, no, I had hearing issues on my mind because of my doctor's situation. So we're going to talk about this final rule to clarify rights to employee representation during an OSHA inspection tomorrow. But let me say this, as far as treatment's concerned of tinnitus, are there legitimate treatments for this? Absolutely. You need to talk to your doctor for what those are. The first step is to get evaluated. Now you're going to say, well, what about this and what about that and what, okay. Normally, because this is self-reported, right, often health insurance doesn't cover it. And there's a lot of people out there that are desperate. A lot of people with hearing loss, there's a lot of people with all different types of situations there that where the tinnitus is debilitating. I get it. Believe me, I 100% get debilitating tinnitus. So they go out, they go for all different types of things. And as my doctor, I believe, correctly said, the it's trial and error. Some things work for one person, some things may not work for another person. There are certain vitamins that might help because some people believe that there's a vitamin deficiency. There are some people who say the vitamins are baloney. There are some people who, it goes all over the place. So hopefully mine will get better and I'll be able to manage it more. One of the things that I do is I sleep when I'm having a tough time about it. I sleep with the radio on. My wife doesn't like that, so I'm, with that. And if you notice, right, one of her questions was, my doctor, do you wear headphones? I said only when I'm here on the air for that 1 hour and they're dialed all the way down. I see this happening in the future where we have people with consumer-grade headphones, right, that have no noise reduction rating, but they think that it has a noise reduction rating. Some of them do, some of them don't, for earphones. And they say, well, guess what? I'm using these, and they're noise-canceling headphones. Well, are they noise reduction rated? No, but I'm wearing them anyway. They like to listen to music. And what do? Hey, I'm jackhammering. I cannot hear the music, so I'm going to jack the music all the way up. So therefore, I don't hear the jackhammer. Yeah, it happens. And what happens? Those people are going to be the ones who, now you got to figure out, was that work-related or not, like we just went through. If you say, well, it's not work-related, you got to go to your doctor. They're going to go to their doctor and say, well, and the doctor is going to say, well, this is work-related. And now, because it's work-related, now it's a worker's comp issue. And now you're going to have to battle that out. So my advice, as always, is when you hire the employee, as soon as possible, get that audiometric test done. Then if it comes up later on, hey, I have tinnitus, blah, blah, blah. Well, we had an audiometric test done. This is what your readings were. Blah, blah, blah. You may have tinnitus and self-reported, but guess what? Blah, blah, blah. This is what it is. And you're going to say, well, Jim, that's cruel. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. And did you know that I was talking to a veteran today, and one of our listeners out there, Allison, she had mentioned that as of this week, Monday, the VA, unless you're under certain circumstances, will not consider tinnitus as part of a disability thing as of April 1st. And that they have a whole system of going and evaluating that. So, serious thing. I've heard of people, doing self-harm because of this. I've heard of people in all different types of situations. So this is not something to be messed with or played around with, is tinnitus. And I'm going to encourage everybody out there to get evaluated. If you're having an issue, if you're an employer, make sure your employees get evaluated in accordance with the regulation, and just cover yourself. Now, one last thing right here. We had a situation at a former workplace that I was involved in, where we had a situation where everybody the plant closed down. All right, plant closed down, and everybody at the plant received a worker, got workers' comp at the end of the situation. They got a huge settlement because of tinnitus issues and other hearing loss. Half of the people there wore earphones when working, which in a warehouse, I don't see how that happens. This is a summer job. But what it comes down to is this. When I got into the safety field, I went back to my warm market, where I had worked, and they had said, and I had suggested, hey, noise survey, and they gave me the New Jersey salute on that. You can figure out what that is. So that's all we have for tonight. But later on, they were paying the bills. I mean, I know people, they got a ridiculous amount of money for tinnitus situations. So that's all we got for tonight, and we will catch you later.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.